Welcome to the Rewrite Your Life Story podcast, hosted by your favorite duo, Stephen and Charlene. They're here to help you transform your mindset and create a positive outlook on life. Are you tired of feeling stuck and unfulfilled? Are you ready to take control of your thoughts and emotions and rewrite your story? Well, you're in the right place. They will be sharing inspiring stories, practical tips, and expert advice to help you on your journey to a better you. You'll learn how to let go of negative self-talk, embrace your strengths, and focus on the good things in life. Each episode, we'll be joined by amazing guests who have rewritten their own life stories and are now living their best lives. From successful entrepreneurs to accomplished athletes, we'll bring you stories of resilience, courage, and triumph. So grab a cup of coffee, get cozy, and get ready to be inspired. Tune in every week for a new episode of the Rewrite Your Life Story podcast. Let's rewrite our stories together and make every day count.
In today's episode, we interview Brian Charlot, who grew up in a small town in Canada. Brian went to Concordia University in Montreal, Quebec, and played 5 years of football in the city. 3 years into his student athlete career, he tore his ACL in spring camp. Join us as we jump into his story.
Before we get started, we want to remind you that the information presented in this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The views and opinions expressed by the hosts and their guests are their own and do not represent the views of any organisation or entity. Additionally, any information presented should not be taken as legal, medical, or financial advice. Always consult with a licensed professional in the respective field for any advice or guidance. Now that we've got that out of the way, let's dive into today's topic and learn how to transform our lives through positive thinking and taking control of our stories. Thanks for joining us.
Before we begin, we want to give you a heads up. We may be discussing some sensitive and personal topics that might bring up some strong emotions or discomfort. Our goal is to create a safe and supportive space, but we know that everyone's experiences and triggers are different. If you start feeling overwhelmed or triggered during an episode, remember to prioritize your well-being. It's totally okay to hit pause and take a breath. Your self-care is important, and looking after your mental and emotional health should always come first. If you ever need extra support, we encourage you to reach out to a mental health professional or someone you trust. You're not alone, and there are resources available to help you on your personal journey. Thank you for joining us on this incredible ride with the Rewrite Your Life Story podcast. Together, we'll navigate life's challenges and rewrite our narratives with strength and resilience.
Hey everyone, it's Stephen and Charlene, and welcome to another episode of Rewrite Your Life Story. And today we have Brian Charlot all the way from Toronto, Canada. Brian, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be here.
Thank you. So Brian, you're the author of a book called Pitching Sales and also the founder of Pitching Sales Consultancy. But before you became an author, before you went down and started consulting in sales, tell us a little bit about your background.
I can definitely say if you start from the beginning, there's no way I would have told you I would have a book and kind of be focusing on what I do now with that consulting and helping these young sales professionals mold their career. I would not have told you that. I grew up in a small town. I went off to university in Montreal, Quebec. I was a student athlete there. I played football for the university. I got a degree in a Bachelor of Arts, and I was really focusing in on business with a minor in marketing and business. Never really had this in my mind until a few years ago when I started to actually write it. And I think it goes a long way into what this podcast is about, in the sense that your life doesn't always follow a smooth plan. And what you think you might be doing in 10 years, hey, if it works out, great. And it actually follows that plan, hey, go for it. But for a lot of us, that doesn't happen. And you have to be able to be flexible. You have to be able to go with the flow. And when opportunity presents itself, take it. Filter out the bad ones, take in the good ones, just lots of change and transition. And as you said, I'm extremely happy where I am now, but I could not have told you this is where I would have been when it all started. So I think that focuses a lot on what this is about and that it's okay to not be where you thought you would be.
So tell us a little bit about growing up in a small town and then moving to a bigger town for university, because obviously that has a lot of impact as well.
Yeah, and the fact that I did grow up in a small town in Canada, especially because I was focusing in on football. Football is not the main sport in Canada. Obviously, hockey is that. We do still have a lot of good football programs. But when you grow up in a small town, you're not really privy to a lot of the opportunities that some of the larger cities have. The facilities, sports programs, high-level coaching, et cetera. So even that wasn't on my list of what I was planning to do. I actually went to university in a different school in Sudbury, kind of a smaller, big city, if you will. And an opportunity presented itself while I was there to pursue this student athlete career at a larger university in a larger city. And that was something that I felt I couldn't pass up, and actually transitioned from the university I originally expected, the program I originally thought I wanted to be in, packed up and left after 1 year and moved to Montreal to pursue that. Just, it was one of those things where I felt like if I didn't give it a try, it was something I was going to regret, not knowing that, because I put a lot of work into my athletic career before putting it aside to do this. And it was eating at me, like what could have been. And I kind of followed that passion and packed up and left and went to Montreal and started pursuing that side of it, because it's one of those things, like I used to work on farms in the summer. Like I didn't train and practice and have all these. You look at athletes in today's day and age and they train 365 all year round and they have all these sports specific coaching, and I didn't have any of that. I was sitting there working on farms. And so it wasn't a thing I thought I would have as an opportunity, but when it presented itself, I took it and did that as a university / athletics career opportunity.
So you're at university, you have this option, and you have an injury.
Yeah, it was going pretty smoothly for a while, as most things do when you start. I was there, I'd been there for 3 years. Things were actually progressing quite well. And during a training, it was actually an off-season training, we were just at a facility in the morning and tear my ACL. And 1 minute, everything is going great. And you're 3 years into this amazing opportunity that you've been given. And all of a sudden you're lying on the field knowing, because trust me, when you do this, you know that you've done something. And all of that kind of flashes before you. And everything you had done to that point is now in jeopardy. And for those who are listening that have had this happen to them, a lot runs through your mind in a very short period of time, pretty much before the trainer even gets out there to see what's going on. And it's a scary feeling. And I distinctly remember feeling that and how quickly it kind of overcame me. And that was a big shock to the system, and something that, as an athlete, you know, can happen at any time, but you can't be thinking about that while you're playing. And you just kind of deal with it once it happens.
What was the impact of that with your university? Obviously, you're in a sports university. You've had, well, in a sports program for a university, you've had a major tear. How did that affect the rest of your university?
Well, at first, it is something that I don't want to call it common, but it's not uncommon in terms of something that can happen to an athlete. The problem is it's minimum 6 month recovery, which essentially takes you out of a season. And as supportive as everybody is, it's very difficult being part of a team, because you can still be around them. You can still, they go to the functions, you can go to meetings, you can go to practice, you can still be involved with the team. But as any athlete will tell you, it feels different. There's a little bit of an aura, especially when you're out for that long. If you're out for a couple of weeks, it's one thing. But when you know you're going to be out for an entire season, it's maybe more internal. But I know, having talked to a lot of people who have been in that position, you just have this feeling of you're a part of the team, but you're not. You're not able to go out there and help them. They know that. Coaches know it. You just kind of fade away a little bit. And you really got to show that you're working and trying hard to come back. And you're almost trying to prove to them, like, hey, I'll be back. Trust me. And it has a mental fatigue on you, trying to keep your spirits up, stay with the guys, be a part of all of this. And that's when the second injury happened. Literally, as I'm struggling with all of these things, a full season has passed. I'm ready to go for the next year. I've just been doing, I think it was about 7 months into the rehab, training for the next season. And I do it again. Same knee, same, not exact same scenario, but immediate. And if you thought that it affected you mentally the first time, well, the second time, it's about as low as you can get after putting all that work in. So the second time is just way worse on top of it.
Is that because you have feelings of this is it now?
Yeah, the first time you've seen people deal with that injury, you're playing with guys who have had it happen to them, recovered, are playing again. So there's a lot of optimism as you're recovering the first time. The medical science is as good as it's ever been. The surgery is not nearly as invasive as it used to be. The rehab is top notch. You're actually surrounded by university level training staff with a lot of the tools they need to help you and the time to help you recover. And you're not doing it on your own. It's not as if you have to pay for the physio, right? All that equipment is there for you. The second time, how do I do this? This is it. And when you've led your entire life to that point, with the identity of being an athlete, and now you consider yourself to be an elite athlete at a university level, and it's ripped away from you, and you know that feeling, it's about as devastating as it gets, because the first thought is, this is it. There's no recovering from this.
I guess the thing that, too, we need to factor in when you had this accident, you weren't at home. You weren't surrounded by
family,
your support network or your immediate. So that too is going to play on your mind.
Yeah, that phone call home was really tough. I don't want to say I'm getting goosebumps from it, but I know exactly how I felt. And when you have a support system that was as it is to this day still, as incredible as I have and I'm lucky enough to have, breaking that news to them is almost as devastating as what you were feeling to begin with. And it's funny because at that time, you don't know what's next. And when you've had a structured timeline, you have a structured training regimen, you have a structured academic path, and then it's all gone. It's a very uneasy feeling, not knowing what the next day brings to you, let alone the next year or 2 years or whatever timeline you want to look at, because it doesn't matter which one you look at because you don't know what the next day is going to bring.
How do you actually cope with that news and having to deal with that first phone call back to family, having that feeling? What did you do to cope with that?
Definitely, I had to really lean on the teammates and friends that I had where I was, because it's not a scenario, like I said, the distance between where my family back home friends were to where I was living was about 8 hours drive. So it's not as if they can hop in a car and see in an hour and see at the hospital or something like that. It's a long ways, and they have jobs and they have to work and they have responsibilities as well. I really, really leaned on the friends and teammates that I had, and they helped me immensely. But it's even uneasy for them because I can put myself in their shoes. They don't really know what to say. They are just kind of there because they don't know what's happening next for you. They don't know the severity of the injury. They don't know. They're honestly just there. And as much as people are around you, it does feel alone that first night that you're just lying there. And yes, you've had people giving you tons of support and saying, hey, don't worry, you'll be back. It's all good. That first night is really just only, it's one of those things that it was very difficult. And you just have to sit in it. To be honest, at some point, everyone's going to be gone. It's just going to be you in your room and you have to sit in those feelings and digest it because you have to go through that before you can get to the next step. You have to deal with the reality of the situation, then figure out what the next step is.
Brian, what happens next? You do rehab? Do you go back and play in sport? What happens?
Yeah, it's funny because I sat in it, I thought about it, and I thought, well, I just gave up 6-7 months of my life rehabbing this to get back to play. Like, well, I already did that. So what's 7 more months, right? That's kind of where my head went. And I know a lot of that decision was based on, I didn't know what else to do. That's all I'd know. The idea of saying that's it. And like the idea of being carried off the field by teammates twice to end a career that I'd put so much work and effort into, I think that's what snapped me into my decision. One, I didn't know what else to do. I was still going to school, so I knew I could still do that anyways. I knew I was still going to finish my education. I was still going to get my degree. I was going to take care of myself that way. But I was like, I don't know what else to do. All I know is sports. And now I know the process of the rehab. None of these things are going to surprise me. I'm just going to do it again. And my goal, as soon as I digested everything and took the time to think, I was like, my goal is now to walk off the field on my own terms and have that feeling of not letting this injury be the last memories I have of my athletic career.
Awesome. So you finished university. What does your career bring to you?
So once it was such a whirlwind because at that time, everything was just what's next in front of me. I wasn't looking big picture because there was so much to do. Like I said, so the rehab happens 7 months later. I ended up missing 2 years of the season. And I came back and I played my final year. I wasn't nearly as good. I didn't expect to be. I tried to be, but my body limitations at that point now with such a short period of time to get ready for the next season. But I played. I played all the games. I was able to walk off the field. I put so much effort into that. And then I was like, oh, crap. Now what? Right? Because I had just been staring at the tree in front of me instead of the forest of the grander things in life that happened next. And after I got the degree at the same time, it was pretty much kind of overlapped simultaneously. I was like, oh, now I don't know what to do at all because there's no athletics to fall back on. There's not the teammate support around me. Now I'm just in this big city that I think I want to call home. I don't know. So that just puts you right back, not to where you were when you were injured, but this timeline now is just that you were following. So just came to an end. It's just over. And you're just at the end of it, like, okay, now the real world is coming after me. What now? And I tried to live in Montreal and stay there for 2 years. And whether you know or not, it's a French Canadian city. My French wasn't good enough to be living there full time in terms of pursuing a business career. So I tried that out, failed miserably in a lot of senses because I just kept holding on. Because at that time, especially looking back, I was scared of the transition. I was comfortable where I lived. I was surrounded by former teammates. I didn't have a plan at all. And I was afraid of the change that was in front of me. And I essentially avoided it. And that was the first thing I did post-university, post-athletics, was avoid the reality in front of me. And it was really tough.
Yeah, so what did you feel at the time would happen if you had embraced that change then? What were you most afraid of?
I was afraid of admitting I didn't know what I was doing. Yeah. That was the biggest thing because everything had been very structured up to that point. Everything had timelines and I had an idea of what I wanted to be, but I didn't know what that reality looked like. And it certainly didn't look like the one in front of me. And I was very afraid of that. And I think even athletes that don't go through what I went through in terms of injuries and things like that, the end of the line for athletes after, who knows, by that time, you've probably been playing sports for 20 years. This is like across the board. I talk to people, we don't get enough training and heads up before the end of our career to transition out of it. We're just essentially plucked from this thing that we've always known and put on the other side of the fence. And there's just a bunch of us out there not knowing what we're doing on top of it. Some do, but a lot of them don't. And that's really difficult to deal with.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And it's almost as what I'm hearing is with athletes, their identity is in what they do rather than who they are as humans. So therefore, when that exterior or that external thing is torn away, I don't know who I am anymore.
Yeah, that's about as bang on as you can get. And it's something that a lot of athletes, and like I said, I don't want to generalize everyone, but a lot do. And we avoid looking at that until we can't. We avoid it to the last time we step off the field or off the ice or leave school if you're a student athlete. Until the graduation, you can kind of hang on to it. You're still part of that sports team. You played that year. And our identity is so much, I don't know how to describe it because I wasn't anything else. So I don't want to put words in other people's mouths in terms of how they felt if they weren't one. But I can certainly say our identity is so based on performance at specific times and regimented training that you have to be at and practices you have to be at, meetings you have to be at, just such a structure. It's almost military-like in a sense, where you have to be here at this time. This is what we're doing. You have to be here at this time. We expect you to perform at this level. If you don't perform at this level, you don't play. If you do perform at this level, you continue to play. This guy behind you is looking to take your spot. There's this competitive nature, and then it's gone. And you don't know who you are, what you're supposed to do, where you're supposed to be at what time. And a lot of people struggle with that. And until they can harness all the good qualities of that, it's disarray for a bit. The good news is all those things are beneficial in the real world, in the business world, in the job world, and in your career. All those things find their place eventually. But it's a matter of taking all this scatteredness of all these great things you've learned and now applying it to a different structure and creating your own structure. I think that's what a lot of people, you get to create your structure in this real world. I keep saying that in comparison to the athletic world, you get to create it. And I think that's what scares people. But in the end, I think that's what's going to benefit them for all these things they've learned once they realize they get to mold their own identity once again with all these great things they've learned.
Yeah,
so now you're an author and you're coaching people. Obviously, a lot of those skill sets are transferable from when you were an athlete. Tell us a bit about the work you're doing now and how that has impacted you in rewriting your story.
Yeah, and so the biggest thing which led me to this was just going into these. So I started into sales. That's what I decided to end up doing at entry-level jobs and cutting my teeth in some crazy atmospheres and office scenarios and bouncing around because, you know, at that age, I was mid-20s at that time. And if I found office spots or jobs, and there were some hectic ones, just people running everywhere and people yelling at everyone and just high stress, high intensity locations, that I was like, well, this can't be what I'm looking for. This can't be what I do for the next 30, 40 years. It just isn't. But the biggest thing that I took away from that was, okay, well, if this isn't what you want, start shaping into what you do want. Take something from this environment. Don't just walk out and say, this isn't for me. This is garbage. No, you say, okay, well, I'm here. So take something from it, learn from it. And that's what I continued to do as I progressed through my sales career until I landed in a spot that really fit what I had been looking for. And it was at about that time, I thought, that was a little bit crazy. That was like 5 years of trying to find what I was looking for and struggling and piecing together what I had learned and being able to tailor what I was applying for next to find ultimately what I was looking for. And that's what led me to write this book, because I was like, it shouldn't be this hard. And every person I talked to had similar experiences. No one really fell into this sales job or sales profession where there was a fit for them right away. They had to just scratch and claw and figure it out on their own. And I thought, well, there's got to be a better way. I just learned all of these things. Why don't I put it pen to paper and help the group behind me as best I can? And that's what really triggered something in me. Because another big factor was just talking to people. And when you tell them you're in sales, they've either had an experience with sales professionals that maybe rubbed them the wrong way. I think we all have that in a certain way. If you've ever talked to a telecommunications provider or something like that, you just shake your head sometimes. And there can be a stigma to that profession of people that aren't in it. And there's a ton of people that also tried it and disliked it so much that they got out of it. And they couldn't return. And even though they probably could have been very, very good sales professionals, the experience that they had and the struggles they had prevented them from getting into it. And then when I decided, hey, this is the people I want to help, if I can, that re-triggered that identity we talked about. Because I had been just trying to take care of myself because I was struggling. So when you're in that moment, you're almost in your own survival mode for your own career and your own well-being. And then when you are able to get your feet on the ground, you can then say, okay, now I want to help the people behind me that are doing that. And that really triggered that identity, which we talked about earlier.
What approach do you take with helping people in sales? You know, I think my personal belief is all of us are, everyone is involved in sales, whether you're telling your friend about a movie or whether you're referring a product or whether you're just
trying to get kids to
eat the broccoli. Yeah, exactly. Or sharing an experience. Everybody is in some form of sales or does some form of sales in their daily life. And I remember early on reading Zig Ziglar, and he was saying he's one of the oldest trainers in sales, and saying something along the lines that if you learn the art of selling, you'll never be broke, basically along those lines. And don't quote me because it's been a long time. Where do you start from someone? Because I know Charlene and I have worked with people and spoken to people, and they'll say, no, I'm not a salesperson, or that's not for me, I'm not a salesperson. And I'm like, oh, really? Is that what you think it is? It's actually about sharing, you know, like sharing your story, sharing your experience. How would you help that person?
Well, the biggest thing that I start with, especially if I'm, even if it's not through this, if it's at a current job I'm at or somebody that approaches me about sales, and you can look at it from any specific, and this is where I say you can relate a lot of things from being an athlete to this. When you're a third year university and a rookie's coming in and they're struggling and they're looking and they got eyes as big as saucer plates and just overwhelming to them at some point, the biggest thing I do to comfort people is be like, I was there. I was there not too long ago. I'm not some person that has been out of the field for 20 years. I'm still in the field today doing sales job. And I think that just comforts them, like, hey, I'm here too. I know exactly what you're feeling. And the second part that I find is that salespeople sometimes get the idea when they're new to this that they have to become someone they're not. They have to become, it's like, oh, you got to be stronger in this. You got to be more brash. You got to manipulative. Whatever the case is, they've heard all kinds of stories. And I, second thing I tell them is you have to start by being you. That is, you don't have to change who you are. Use yourself as a foundation and grow from there. It's hard enough being in the sales profession as it is. It's even harder when you're trying to be someone else in a profession that you're unfamiliar with. And the third thing I say is if the base, you start by being yourself, and if you keep your integrity for the long term in this profession, you will be successful if you start there. So those three factors. It's okay. Deep breath. We're all here. Every salesperson you talk to has gone through this whole thing. Two, start with you. We'll grow. We'll work on strengths and hone strengths, and we'll find your weaknesses and work with those and adapt with what you are as a person. And then three, if you go into it with integrity, the end user, the person that you're trying to help, will see that. That doesn't mean they're going to buy, but if you do that in the long run, you're going to help more people than not. And those are the three big factors I just start with from there.
So, Brian, it sounds like the book that you've done is targeted to help people that you used to be.
Mm-hmm. It's a blunt way to put it. Yes, there is a lot of personal stories in there that I tried to connect with people that are reading it. And the main reason for that is to let them know that deep breath, like, what you're feeling right now, this overwhelming feeling, if you're already in the profession, is natural. And then it's, again, to kind of relate it back to, I don't know anything else than what I was previously, which is the background we talked about. I try to lay things out as easy and steps that you can follow today to ease that feeling and start moving forward, falling forward. The biggest thing I try to do as well is not sugarcoat it. I don't go, oh, you're going to be in sales, you're going to make $1 zillion. And you're going to be living on easy street, because as actually Zig Ziglar's the one who quotes it, I don't know exactly how he phrases it off the top of my head, but it's something like, sales is the easiest low paying job you'll ever have, but it's the hardest high paying job that you'll get because of the work that you have to put in behind the scenes. And I think as much as I'm helping people step by step and what they can do today after reading this chapter, you can implement these things. But secondary saying, hey, the reality is this is going to be tough. If you came into sales thinking it's going to be, I know this sales guy and I think I'm smarter than him and he makes $1 million. I can do that. So you probably can't right away.
So sales is not a quick get rich quick scheme?
No. As much as people try to get you to believe it, you look at these influencers and some of these books that I have read, they're written by people that are rich, that are 30 years into being sales professionals. Because the biggest thing is you can become wealthy from sales if you put the work in. If you grind and you get better at your craft day by day and year by year and learn and help and implement and mentor and all these things, you can be that person. But they make it seem like, just follow these steps. And with no context into what you're going to face when you reach those steps. And it kind of puts a filter on the profession as a whole. And then you're like, oh, this seems simple. You go out and you're like, oh, this is way different now. So I try not to sugarcoat that for them and very high dose of reality while trying to help them at the same time.
Yeah. And that's so true. Like, work on your craft, whatever your craft is, if it's sales, if it's counseling, if it's mentoring, whatever it is. And you did mention mentors there, get some mentoring. What role have mentors played in your life when it comes to your career?
Huge. I wouldn't be where I am without mentors and coaches. That's just, again, another dose of reality. And I talk about that in the book. One of the final steps, and why I say final, is I go through what's going to hold you back in sales, excuses, things like overcoming rejection and your own self-doubt and things like that. Then I get into habits that are going to help you excel in sales. I get into all kinds of these things first. Then I discuss finding a proper mentor and also making sure that you're not getting caught up in a bad mentor, someone trying to take advantage of you, which can happen to young professionals all the time. Somebody is trying to essentially get, you know, you're creating leads for someone else to make money sometime. Those people are out there. It's a smaller percentage than you think, but they're out there. That's just something I try to warn them. But in terms of finding that mentor after, the biggest advice, these people will be the biggest catalyst of your career, but they're not going to come and pick you up and carry you there. They want to see you putting in the work for them to give their time, because they're trying to run their own career. They're trying to establish themselves and provide for their own family and themselves. So if you're just sitting there twiddling a pencil at your desk, they're not going to come help you, or they shouldn't. If you are, it's probably not a great mentor. They want to see you picking up the phones, overcoming rejections, not making excuses, being positive in the office, talking about where you want to be in a number of years. That mentor is going to see that, because they're going to see a lot of themselves and how they got to where they are. That's the time a mentor is going to come and help guide you from there. But you have to put in that initial effort. You can't just sit at your office on day one and be like, oh, someone come help me, I'm willing to take a mentor. It doesn't work that way. You have to show your own desires, your own efforts, and that mentor will come and he will help you. He will give you some air under your wings, like a baby bird trying to fly. He's going to give you help. You can't just sit there. And that's when you find a really good mentor that's going to help you out and teach you everything you need to know about that industry and company.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much. Actually, I've never asked this question, but I'm just curious. Do you have any apps on your phone or any tools that you use just to keep you accountable to your craft?
Yeah. Well, I don't have it on my phone. I'm pretty old school. I have a whiteboard that's just over here that I try to continually update. I keep quotes on it that I like. I keep my schedules. If we're doing podcasts, meetings that I have to get to, I'm old school like that. I got a pad in front of me. Like I said, I got this. So I should be transferring more into my phone, but a big factor, two things I talk about a lot, and both are in that book. It's a great question. One is organization. How you do it isn't necessarily the big thing. I'm not going to say use this app, because there's plenty of stuff out there. Do what works for you. But whatever it is, make sure you're organized from it, because organization isn't a sometimes thing in the business world or any career. You have to practice it outside of your career too. You can't be late for your dentist appointments all the time and your doctor's appointments or your kids' soccer games or whatever it may be, and then expect to be at all your meetings on time when the day starts at work. So it's something you have to practice all the time. And then the second thing is accountability, is be organized because you're accountable. If you say you're going to be somewhere, be there. And if you're not there, make sure you're calling them ahead of time, not just not showing up or just showing up 10 minutes late. You call them and say, hey, I'm running late. I'm really sorry. That's not a good practice because you want to be on time. But if you are, accountability. And then don't say, oh, the traffic. Just say, hey, I'm late. I'm sorry. And accountability in any career, I'm obviously in the sales profession, so I know how big it is there, but it's all over the place. Accountability, organization, two massive things that you have to be willing to put the effort in to succeed.
And that's brilliant, yeah. You know? And you're so right. It's find a tool that works for you. There's so many out there. Yeah.
So you've gone through a lot in your life, from your athletics days to finding your identity to coming into this book and finding your mentors through this whole journey. So what advice would you give to someone who wants to rewrite their own life story?
Yeah, I think the first thing you have to do, again, I can't speak on where somebody listening to this is, but you have to accept where you are first. You have to say, okay, whether they want to make more money, whether they want to get in better physical condition, whether they want to get a different career path, where they have to, it doesn't matter what it is. The first thing is accepting, okay, I'm in a place where I don't want to be, blatant and simple, and sit in that. And start maybe if you want to, if you got a good support system. The support system too is very much like a mentor, what I was talking about. You have a great support system around you, that's phenomenal. But if you're just wallowing in where you are, it's going to be very difficult on them to continually pick you up and do this. Your support system is ready to help you if you are ready to help yourself. You are able to collab with them, I promise you, if you have a good support system. And if you don't, go help, try to find others that will. But you have to put in the effort and say, hey, this is my goal now. This is the steps I'm doing to do it. And actually start on that journey. Your support system will be there for the ride, but they will not be there if you tell them every month that, hey, this is what I'm going to do, and you continually don't do it. It starts to fall on deaf ears. So that's very much like the mentorship in the support system. So accept where you are, decide where you want to be. And that can be really difficult. If you're in that process, start making positive steps. Doesn't matter. You say, hey, I'm not quite sure what I want to be, but I know it's not this. So start taking some positive steps. As you figure that out, well, guess, just like we talked about, it translates all over life. Accountability to yourself. Well, I told myself this is what I want to do. I promised myself I would do it. Now the action takes place, because that's what the support system and the mentorship want to see, is that you can't help somebody that's not willing to help themselves. So have that accountability. And I actually have a quote in there that I put from Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I say, in self-trust, all virtues are comprehended, meaning you need to trust yourself that you're going to put the actions that you've laid out into practice. If you do that, that's when people start to take notice, because they're not going to take notice when you tell them. They're going to take notice when you start doing it. And you have to be able to trust whatever plan you come up with, you're actually going to follow through with it. And that's when things start taking shape and you start rewriting your story, because you trust yourself to do what you said you were going to do, not someone else to do it for you.
That's one of the things a lot of people do tend to fall into, relying on other people to tell them what to do, or to tell them just to feed their ego, oh, you're okay, you don't need to change, or things like that. You know, the toxic friends are saying, no, why do you need to change? Because they want you to stay there. But like, you pinned it down really well with that whole reflection and really asking themselves, what do I need to do? Where am I now? And really embracing that and accepting where they are. So, Brian, if you could go back and rewrite your life story now, what would that look like?
See, there's the reflection part that people need to do. To kind of piggyback on your point, it's a scary conversation to have with yourself when you're in a comfortable spot. Very scary. And you have to be vulnerable with yourself. You have to be vulnerable with the people around you and saying, if you want to rewrite your story, it means you're not happy with where it currently is or the trajectory it's on. And telling people that and telling yourself that takes vulnerability. When I look back, I don't regret working through those injuries and playing and having that final year and being a late bloomer into the career I'm in. But I would have started identifying that I wasn't happy with where I was going earlier. That's really it, because I look back and I say, well, maybe it took that to really jumpstart me. Because once you figure it out and you start putting plans into actions and your support system's helping you and you start to get momentum, it can go quickly. And I think that's what people need to realize too. It's the best time to start was yesterday. The next best time is today. And just this, the momentum starts going. And I think, why did it take me so long to have that conversation with myself and be honest with myself, even though I knew it to be true, then start to go? And I think I just did that too late, because I'm happy with the results, but I was scared of that initial boost. I was like, well, I can just keep living here and I can keep just doing this job and I can. No, the reality is the sooner you have that conversation, you'll be shocked at what you are able to accomplish when you have that accountability and you have that support system and you have that plan in action. But you have to identify it and plan and start falling forward, as I like to say. That happens all the time in sales. You're going to get hung up on, you're going to get rejected, you're going to lose sales, but you're falling forward. Falling backwards is not picking up the phone. Falling backwards is not putting a plan in place. Falling backwards is being unorganized. Falling backwards is missing appointments. Falling forward is getting to the appointment and losing the sale. Falling forward is getting to the appointment, progressing, building the relationship. He doesn't want to buy yet. Tons of these things, but always be falling forward. And that's what having a strong plan and a strong accountability does for you.
Awesome. Brian, thank you so much for your time. And if you want to know more about Brian, head over to his website, and his book will also be on our show notes. Brian, thank you once again for joining us on today's show.
Well, thanks for having me. I had a blast talking with you guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Thank you.
Now that we've interviewed our guest, join Charlene and I as we recap today's episode.
Now, I really liked Brian's strategies that he spoke about and his story, you know, about being an athlete and not knowing your identity. But I think one of the key things he spoke about, and I think which is really important, is he didn't actually say it like this, but he's basically what we call transferable skills.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, so one skill that you learn in one area, you can transfer it to the other area and you can rewrite your life in there.
It's like just being able to take the skills from one place and just reframing that into a whole new purpose and repurposing what you already know into another area.
And into another career. I like the fact that he put such a strong emphasis on accountability. But not only did he put an emphasis on external accountability.
Internal
accountability. You know, we always think about accountability as being something on the outside. But Brian was like, be accountable to yourself. Yeah,
being true to your own word and keeping your appointments, doing the things that, and communicating if you can't make things on time.
Yeah, I really like that. I think that's one of my key takeaways.
Yeah, that's definitely a really great interview tonight with Brian.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. We hope you found it informative and inspiring. If you enjoyed this episode, please like and share it with your friends and family. Also, make sure to visit our website at www.rewriteyourlifestory.com.au to learn more about our mission, products, and services. And remember, you have the power to rewrite your own life story. So go out there, face your challenges head on, and create the life you've always wanted. We'll see you in the next episode.